when you want, where you want, but rather you have to work at someone else's orders. Citizens have to have driver's license, marriage license, business license, special licenses for special things, whereas if you're one of the people, you don't. Of course, that's theory. In actual practice, there are problems with enforcing your rights. So we compromise sometimes. Sometimes some of us do get driver's licenses and we do get business licenses and so forth because we just don't want to spend time battling. But in theory, the licensing is only for the citizens, not for the people. Okay, well, enough of that. There is a difference between people and citizens, and this is covered in this CD. Okay, the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights, basically, that is part of the instructions to the government. Understand one thing, that when you sue the government, you should never, ever claim in your lawsuits that your rights were violated. Because they're under no obligation to not violate your rights. Your rights have been violated, the proper way to say it is that the government exceeded its jurisdiction. And because it exceeded its jurisdiction, you then became injured in the loss of your rights. That's the proper sequence. So now, here we have, I went to Senate document 99-16, which is also known as the Constitution of the United States of America Analysis and Interpretation. And there's a complete copy of that on this CD. But I took an extract of it, and on page 956 and 957, there's a footnote 12. And in that footnote, they list all of the Bill of Rights, or Bills of Rights, that are available to the citizens. And they also list the ones that are not available to the citizens. Because remember, a citizen has no rights. All a citizen has is privileges granted by the government. But in order to keep the scam going, because after all, governments do have an allergy to revolution, in order to keep it going, they give it a name that misdirects the attention of the citizens. It's called civil rights rather than civil privileges. Okay? But civil rights are legislated rights. People, you don't see a list here for people for one simple reason. People have all rights. Okay? You don't need to list them. But freedom of religion, that's been legislated and court decided that that's okay for citizens. Freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly and a petition. Freedom from search and seizure, okay? Double jeopardy, freedom from that, freedom from self-incrimination, just compensation for loss of property, okay? The Sixth Amendment is somewhat diluted, but you still have somewhat of a right to speedy trial, public trial, jury trial, impartial jury. Notice of charges, confrontation of witnesses, compulsory process, you know, and right to counsel. Those are all legislative privileges. What a citizen does not have, he does not have a right to keep and bear arms. However, that's such a popular item that they wouldn't dare directly outlaw it yet. Not that they're not trying, but the right to keep and bear arms is not a right. It's actually a privilege at this point for citizens. Now, for people have a right. But citizens do not have a right. It's a privilege. There have been no cases on quartering troops in homes. We haven't gotten to that yet. But they've just decided to put it over in that, well, you don't have a right to resist quartering. Even though there's no cases, they put it in that column. You do not have a right to a grand jury indictment. So you don't have a right to protections from the government by way of the grand jury. That's why so many cases are conducted based on information, okay? You know, the district attorney files an information. And then it goes to the magistrate, and the magistrate functions like a grand jury. He decides whether or not the DA can proceed. But you don't have a right to a grand jury indictment if you are a citizen. Again, on a really serious case, such as murder, they always get an indictment. Why? Because I'm sure some sharp attorney is going to figure out that if he didn't indict, that he could come back and say, hey, you didn't indict. and that would become a big political fiasco, which they don't want. So they always indict on murder. Okay, and then you don't necessarily have a right to a jury trial in civil cases. So, and then you don't have a right to reasonable bail. And you don't have a right to not have excessive fines under, you know, under the equal protection deal. You don't have a protection from that. How often do you see, let's say, $100,000 or $500,000 bail on a tax case and a $10,000 bail on burglary? We've seen it. Well, anyway, if you're a citizen, you don't have a right. And so they're assuming that everybody's a citizen, and it's really hard to... anyway, so that's just a little summary. And that's right out of the Senate's research document. Okay, then we have sovereignty. This is the key to what we're doing here today. Because I want to cover this, because later on when I talk about motions, this is going to come up. But basically, in Chisholm versus Georgia, they said at the Revolution, the sovereignty devolved on the people. And they are truly the sovereigns of the country, but they are sovereigns without subjects, with none to govern but themselves. Okay? The citizens of America are equal as fellow citizens and as joint tenants in the sovereignty. Okay, well, they're talking about citizens there to some bit. Yeah, they're joint tenants in the sovereignty. But actually, if you actually are sovereign, then you're not even a joint tenant. You know what I'm saying? Maybe you're joint tenants in the ownership of the government. Okay, but in a New York case, Lansing versus Smith, the people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. What are the rights of the king? Well, ask the king. He'll let you know. So, you have all the rights that you think you, whatever, however you define them. That's different from citizens. Citizens have their privileges defined for them. Okay? So, I don't forget that point, because I exercise that when I make my motions and stuff. All right. Republic versus democracy. This is what makes it all work. You all said the Pledge of Allegiance, right? I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. Well, it's a republic, not a democracy. Let me explain a democracy. A democracy is mob rule. A democracy, 51 beats 49. In a democracy, the minority has zero rights. No rights whatsoever. In a democracy, the majority says what is. If the minority has any privileges, it is those that are granted at the goodwill and pleasure of the majority. Okay? That's a democracy. In a democracy, the sovereignty of the state lies in the whole body of the people. So the whole body of the people express their will through the voting system, majority rule, but then the whole body splits up and all the individuals are subject to whatever the whole body had decided. So understand that whatever the whole body of citizens vote for, that is a mandatory force that goes on the citizens. By the way, has anybody heard George W. Bush say that he's got a mandate from the people?
Yeah.
He's right. He's speaking legal language. He's correct. He's got a mandate on the citizens. Okay? That's how democracy works. But this is actually a republic, but it's only a republic for the people. The citizens operate as a democracy. All these rules, codes, whatever, they're mandatory on the citizens. If you're one of the people, then this is a republic. And you'll see, here's the definition, and this is straight out of Black's Law Dictionary, by the way. Now, if you look up democracy, you'll see this definition. That form of government in which the sovereign power resides is and is exercised by the whole body of free citizens, directly or indirectly through a system of representation, as distinguished from monarchy, etc. Okay, that's Black's Law Dictionary, 5th edition. Not even the best edition. Okay? Alright, now, but if you look up Republican government, you can't find it in the dictionary. You find democracy, but you can't find Republican. But if you look under government, they hide it there. Under government, they have a subclassification Republican government, and it is one in which the powers of sovereignty are vested in the people and are exercised by the people, either directly or through representatives chosen by the people, to whom those powers are specially delegated in. And that was in Reed Duncan and, you know, a couple other cases there. Okay, now, one thing to understand about the word people. The word people is both plural and singular. The word people is not the plural of the word person. If you want the plural of person, you say persons with an S. Okay? I don't know if you ever watched the O.J. Simpson trial when they had the Fourth Amendment issue in the municipal court. They were trying to decide whether or not to pass this case on up to the Superior Court for prosecution. And it got to be quite a big deal. It lasted several months. And the judge, I know the judge didn't know this. She's a municipal court judge. She couldn't have been this sharp. But she had help from somebody. But when she read her decision, she never once used the word people. She always said person or persons in the entire thing throughout. And what were they doing? Well, they were treating O.J. Simpson as a person or as a citizen, not as a people. That's why. So the Fourth Amendment did not apply in this case. That's basically what they said. All right. Well, anyhow, let's see. So the thing about a Republican government is this, that the people can exercise their power either directly or through the representatives. Well, I take that concept seriously. I'm one of the people. I've got the power. Okay, and in this case, power means the legal wherewithal. So, I'm a king, and I'm going to do what kings do. And one of the things that kings do is they have their own courts. I also am one of the owners of the country, so what I do is since I already own the Superior Court, my own private court, I also name the Superior Court. And I put my papers right in there. I let their warehousemen store my papers. Their warehousemen are called clerks. Anyhow, the thing about being sovereign is that there is no higher law. There may be a higher moral law, there may be a higher God's law, but there's no higher secular law. And I'm of this world, and so I take my sovereignty seriously. I am sovereign. And it tells you what a sovereign is. In various cases, they've decided it. For example, this is Republic versus Democracy, so it's the wrong place to be talking about sovereignty. But the thing is that as a sovereign, you can either delegate a task or you can do it yourself. Either way. So I do it myself. This whole court business is much too important to leave to judges and attorneys. And you have to understand that when the people vote on something, because there is no higher law, because you are in your sovereign capacity, anything anyone else says to you is merely advisory, not mandatory. So with citizens, the law, whatever it may be, even if it's not real law, even if it's code, it's mandatory. But with people, it's advisory. Now, there's an exception to the advisory rule, and that is that if you have 100% of the other sovereigns against you, then you're wrong. Okay? Now, in Greece, a jury consisted of 1,000 people. The Grecian theory was that no one was rich enough to bribe all jurors. Okay? That was actually their premise. Well, here in the United States, for whatever reason, and we inherited this from England, for whatever reason, we've decided that 12 is a big enough number. And so if you got 12 people against you, you get convicted. But if you got one person on your side, then you walk. And the you got to understand that, statistically speaking, those 12 jurors each represent 1/12 of society. And if you could be convicted on an 11-to-1 vote, that would statistically mean that 1/12 of society has an opinion that doesn't count. So in our society, the minority is important too, in our Republican society, okay? So with the republic, because the minority is important, if you've got 1/12 of society on your side, well, maybe that's a different opinion rather than a crime. So it's one of the beautiful features of our system. Okay, let's go back to sovereignty here. Here's one that I like. I think this pretty well says it right here. In the Bagley-Keene Act, which is the California Government Code, section 11120, and in the Brown Act, which is section 54950, and all this stuff is going to be on the disk that I'll mail to you. Both of these acts have the exact same sentence. And it says, right here, the people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. Now, all right, so I do not yield. You want to mess with me? I'm not yielding. And I'll come back at you with my counterclaim. Okay, so that, by the way, is in the government code. The government code is instructions from the legislature to the government. Yes, sir?
When you couple that with the truth is self-evident, it's very simple and understand.
Okay.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
Yeah, that's in the Declaration of Independence, right? Okay. All right, now, just to see what sovereignty means, it's the power to do everything in a state without accountability. Now, I don't have it here, but in my research I found out that each of us is a state. Every sovereign is a state. Okay, but we also have some other interesting things that I like. For example, well, this is back to what citizens are. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes law. So you see, when you file a common law lawsuit, when you are in law, you decree, because you're sovereign, you decree what the law is. So when you file your lawsuit, you have a complete package. If you do it right, you'll have what looks like the same thing as what you see in a normal equity lawsuit. In addition to that, you have all the evidence packed in with it. In equity, they let you file a lawsuit without the evidence. You can show it later, or the opposition can get it from you under discovery rules. In common law, there is no discovery. Why? Because there is nothing to discover. Okay? When you file that lawsuit, you hit them with the whole package. Got the evidence and everything. When they come up with their answer, they better attack your evidence then. Otherwise, if they fail to object, means they agree. So, also, you present your arguments. You do everything. I mean, it stands alone. There's no need to have a hearing, at least not from my point of view. It's all there. And we laugh at them when they come. When the opposition wants to do discovery about what? You know? We just say, go fly a kite. Well, what they're going to do is they're going to go to court and get a motion in limine. Great. Hey, I'll volunteer for that. Go ahead and limit my evidence. I'm happy that they won't let me present any more evidence beyond what I've already presented. It's all there. So anyway, it really simplifies the case. Sometimes I do go along with discovery only because I know it's running up their costs. Remember, a lot of lawsuits are wars of attrition. You know how to run their costs up. So the thing is that sovereignty means that the decree of the sovereign makes law. This is an important case right here. I love this case. This is a reservation of sovereignty. This is Marion et al. Versus Jicarilla Apache Tribe. So what happened was that Marion went into a contract with the Apache Tribe to do some mining and haul some materials out. And they made the arrangement, splitting the profits and everything. And after all the equipment was in and they had a going operation, the Apache Council said, you know, we need to apply an extraction tax. The corporation screamed to high heaven on that one, it ended up into the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, sorry, Mr. Corporation, but they're sovereign and they can tax. Okay? And here it is. This is what the Supreme Court said. All right, if I can get it right here. It is one thing to find that the tribe has agreed to sell the right to use the land and take valuable minerals from it, and quite another to find that the tribe has abandoned its sovereign powers simply because it has not expressly reserved them through a contract. To presume that a sovereign forever waives the right to exercise one of its powers unless it expressly reserves the right to exercise that power in a commercial agreement turns the concept of sovereignty on its head. Now, why is that an important case? Because, you've heard it, gee, if you've got a Social Security number, you've given up all your rights. Gee, if you've got a driver's license, you've given up all your rights. Uh-uh. No. That's a narrow contract. It's there. It's subject to all the rules of commercial contracts. And you're still sovereign. So that case is the linchpin case that preserves your sovereignty if somebody wants to use that excuse. Now, understand what contract fraud is. If you and I go into a contract and I know something that you don't know about this contract, and I know that if you knew, you would not go into the contract, and if I fail to inform you of it, and I go into the contract with you anyway, that is fraud. And that crashes the contract. Well, guess what? They come up to you, you say you have a Social Security number. You are obligated to the contract. I don't know if they'd say it that plainly, but that's what they would do. And so my question is, well, show me. And they come up with this law. They call it law. I call it a code. And they say, here, this obligates you. Did you know that at the time we went into the contract? I didn't know that. What does that do to the contract? That's right. So I have no problem with the Social Security number and driver's license. I admire those who fight the battle, but the fact is that I've been fighting so many bigger battles with other people and so forth, helping them out, that I haven't really taken time to take care of those issues. Okay. All right, now let's see. What is the definition of a court? And we have court of record and so forth. Let's talk about, I'm going to skip that just for a moment. I want to talk about court etiquette. I think you guys, I see people going to court and they really don't understand some of the unwritten rules. Court, okay? Real important here. Number one, whenever you are in court, you never talk to the other side directly. You talk to them through the magistrate. It's true they can hear everything you're saying, but you direct your focus, your attention to the magistrate. You speak to the magistrate. You talk about the other side in the third person. Him, her, it, whatever. But you talk to the magistrate. You never use the word you to the magistrate. The magistrate is a figurehead. He is merely representative of the court. He is not personally involved. Okay? That's the theory. So whenever you talk to the magistrate, you always refer to the court. Okay? If the court agrees to this, or the court wishes this, or the court whatever. Another important custom is that you never control the court. Not if you're one of the litigants, okay? In other words, you don't say the court's attention is directed to such and such. What are you doing? You've now taken command of the court when you direct the attention. What you should do is you should say the court is invited to see such and such or to take this into account. You invite the court. You don't say the court is directed, that type of thing. It's a common error. I see attorneys do it regularly. Okay? And they're wrong.
So judicial
notice? Well, a judicial notice is the court taking notice of something.
Right.
You're not ordering the court. Nobody orders the court. Not even yourself. Not even your own court. You may be the owner of the court as a plaintiff and sovereign, but you do not order the court at all. The court is above all that. So you never, ever direct the court. You never, ever tell the court anything. You invite the court. Sometimes you hear people say, may it please the court. Okay, in other words, if it's okay. Yes, sir?
So when you say you invite the court,
correct. You submit things to the court. You don't order the court. The court's the only one that issues orders. Even if you are the court. Okay? Now let's get into the definition of a court. But I just wanted to say that little bit about the informal type thing. What is a court? The dictionary definition is that it is the person and the suit of the sovereign. Okay? So, you don't have a court unless you have a king or a queen. You don't have a court unless you have a suit. Now, in the old days, meaning going back 500 years, a court consisted of the king on his throne and all the courtiers in the room. That was the court. People didn't know how to write. The court record was the memories of the people, okay, of the courtiers that were there. The king forgot something, he could ask one of the courtiers, what do you remember about this? It was the king, the sovereign, and his suite. Okay, the suite was all these people. Well, later they dropped the E off of suite and it became suit. Okay, if you look in the older dictionaries, it says it's the person and suite of the sovereign. Well, the modern suite is actually the suit, or in other words, all the papers. So the people, the courtiers, now became pieces of paper. But the concepts are identical. Okay? You look to the paperwork for the memory of the court. So, that's technically what a court is, the person and the suit of the sovereign. Since you are the sovereign, you file a suit, guess what? You cannot be non-suited. Nobody has any authority to throw your suit out. That's what a non-suit is. Okay? In you're in your sovereign capacity. The sovereign cannot be non-suited. Alright? You'll find case law on that if you go looking for it. I may have accidentally included that in here. I don't know. But you cannot be non-suited. That's one of the things. You've heard of suit being dismissed for failure to make a claim upon which relief can be granted. I've got something in here that relates to that, so you can look that up if that issue comes up. So a court is a court is the person in suit of the sovereign. Now that's the technical definition, but what's the real definition? The real definition of a court is that it's a stage upon which the sovereign puts a good show to convince the rest of the world that he is right. See, you're sitting on your throne and you look out the window and you see some knave out there stealing oranges off your orange tree. No problem, you send the guard out, pick him up, throw him in the dungeon. Right? You're the king. You know you're right, he knows he's wrong. What's to argue? On the surface of it, that looks good. However, the problem is this, is that the knave has friends. And although kings are sovereign, they also die easily. And if he's in the dungeon and everybody thinks you did an unfair thing, what's going to happen to you as the king? Okay? So they came up with this clever system. They have a trial. They bring it all out. Everybody's invited to the court. Okay, we've got lots of courtiers running around at the center of power. And so you put on this, you present the evidence and so forth. Now everybody knows that, I mean, even though they're his friend, they knew he asked for it. So the king gets to live longer. That's why you have courts. And I want you to understand this. This is perhaps the most important aspect of legal procedure that you must remember. Do not fail to forget this, because it is extremely important. You are putting on a show. You are there not for your benefit, because you know you're right, not for the defendant's benefit, because he knows he's wrong. You're there because you're convincing the rest of the world you're right. So do the things that sell your case.